Welcome in to the Sports Objective Podcast as we've got a very exciting show. Lots to talk about. Man, we have so little time. We've got one of the things we're going to be talking about tonight, as you see the guy on the screen, and those watching on archive or live right now on Facebook, we have, and also YouTube and Twitter, is Sam Raz of the Scott and Holman Podcast. And I tell you what, I'm so excited. By the way, Bubba's producing tonight behind the scenes. Thank you, Bubba, my friend. He's multitasking, so appreciate being the family man. I'll do that when we get off the air, but he's so good. He can do it all. I'm not that coordinated. Never have been. Kyle Barber will be joining us. You see him on the screen, or if you're listening right now, he'll be joining us in a matter of minutes. But, Sam, we had to have you on because you know that I picked you guys, and I told that to Bubba, we picked you guys to go to the Final Four. And, I hate that, there's sometimes when I hate to be right. This time, I'm very happy to be right because I'm really happy for you guys. First time since 1984. I remember that streak back in the early 80s, man. You guys, even NC State won that one with Live Slam-a-Jamma. And then you have the 84 there. I mean, with Georgetown. But you guys had a nice run there when I was a kid. And it's good to see you guys back. I have to say that. I know I'm a Pirate fan. Obviously, I went to ECU, but conference mate. I actually, by the way, and I'll let you speak in just a second, but I had a guy, before I forget, a Pirate fan didn't realize that you guys winning helped ECU by the sharing of the money.
Yeah, those win shares. I mean, as much as I hate to give that school in the Northeast that left us credit, it's been a good long while since we got some, win shares from a team going deep in the tournament. And, and anything gives us a little extra bucks is a good thing. I think we got a decent old TV deal this last go around, but you compare the dollars and cents between like what we're getting in the AAC and the certain five leagues, what they're getting in a little bit helps. And yeah, it's great. And obviously a nice bonus of my alma mater and the team of my rooting interest getting deep. It's been a blast. Obviously Houston has this great history. You kind of laid it out, the Phi Slam-a-Jam, a lot of history before then too. Good teams in the 70s, Elvin Hayes going back to the 60s. But as much as this program's had a good few years, that kind of elite history felt more like a history rather than a living thing with this program. You look at all the Final Fours this program has made, but you have that 37-year gap between the last one and this one. This kind of makes it feel a little bit more of a living thing, a little bit more like, obviously we knew this program was in a good place and going in the right direction, but just to have that, to know that banner is going to hang regardless of what happens on Saturday afternoon, it's really exciting. Obviously, I don't think anything in my 15, 16 years of real dedicated Cougar fandom really equals it. There have been good times, but there's really nothing like making a Final Four, and obviously just – great time, just soaking in every bit of it that comes my way.
Well, how much and I've told you this before, I'm a huge fan of your coach, being a North Carolina guy that he is from Lumberton. I want to mention that to folks, but if everybody knows who I'm pulling for, I'm pulling for Houston in this thing because, I said they were a Final Four team. And now that you got to the final, now that you're in the Final Four, the beautiful thing about the Final Four, as most people that are listening and watching the show knows, it's a whole different season. This is like, so the great thing about this is you guys have got a lot of talent, and I want to talk about that, but you guys have a lot of talent. Maybe people aren't paying attention. Like, for example, all we've heard all season long, and there's no question Gonzaga and Baylor deserve a lot of attention because they were clearly the two best teams, but you guys also have a great coach and you have great players. I'm not just saying that because you're on and you're our friend, but you guys really, truly, I'm like, from a basketball fan, if you take you out of the equation, I was picking you guys because I really like what I've seen all. And then also the fact the Pirates beat you guys, we can say that we beat the national champions. So
beat them more decisively than anyone who faces this year so far. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. My cat Princess like jumping up there, but she's our guest, our mascot. We have Kyle Barber, the mascot on the screen. We have my cat Princess. And of course you have the great Cougars. Speaking of which, how are the fans? I know you were talking about you, but I bet Houston, man, I'm happy for you guys. It's been a little bit of a drought. Knowing the history of the program, I'm not saying you guys have bad teams, but you would think, I was thinking about that this afternoon, knowing you were coming on, that 1984, it seems like that you guys would have had a Final Four appearance in the 90s. I'm just talking about how good the program has been and how much people love the program. And then you go 1984. I guess it has been that long. It just doesn't feel like that long.
And I think I should tell you how hard it is to get to this point, how hard it is to make a Final Four. Yeah. You could be that this season. There's plenty of really good teams this year and right. many years past that did all they did and still didn't make a Final Four. I mean, you could be a great team, and I think this Houston Cougar team is a great team. I'm not just saying that because it's my team of choice, but you got to have some stuff break your way too. I'm not saying Houston's lucky to be here, but you know, I think like all really good teams, you know, you got to be really good and you got to also have some stuff go your way. You got to, you know, you got to have like someone with, for example, Dejan Giroux's competitive instinct. I really do think a lesser man after he got that hip pointer injury against Cleveland State might not have been able to give all he was able to give in that round of 32 game against Rutgers, where, to be frank, there were a lot of times in that Rutgers game where the Cougars looked dead and buried. And to have someone like Giroux who was able to go out there, play through, you know, the pain of a hip pointer and give the Cougars a good performance, you know, from that point guard spot, a guy who's going to make everyone around him better. I think, you know, that's fortunate too. Honestly, let's go back to 2014. That, you know, we've been conference mates, I think, other than the one weird year that you guys, it was your last year in CUSA and our first year in the AAC. Well, we've been conference mates pretty much long time. It pretty much overlaps neatly with my time as a fan of this program. And in 2014, our program wasn't in great shape. You had Hofheinz Pavilion, which basically hadn't had anything done to it since well before my birth, certainly since Phi Slamma Jamma. You're coming off 4 years of James Dickey, which just wasn't successful. Cougars weren't very good in either Conference USA or the AAC. And you had the good fortune of literally in the city of Houston having an accomplished college basketball coach like Kelvin Sampson, a coach who under normal circumstances wouldn't have given U of H the time of day, but because he had some of that NCAA trouble in his past, because he had the 5 year show cause, and because he had the desire also to get back in the game, because I was familiar with Kelvin Sampson being with the Rockets. He, if you don't remember, he actually filled in as the interim when Kevin McHale dealt with the tragic passing of his daughter. I thought Kelvin Sampson's next chapter was going to be doing kind of the Quinn Snyder thing and being an NBA head coach. I mean, he actually got some interest in the Magic a few years ago when they hired Steve Clifford. You know, the guy had been, you know, coached under some good coaches when he kind of began his second chapter as an NBA assistant. I thought he was done dealing with the shenanigans of college. And when we started hearing that, no, Kelvin Sampson's interested in the Houston opening, I think the consensus between me and my co-host Dustin was, that's awesome. I hope we get him. And if this guy can't get us back to something approaching a decent, you know, regular NCAA tournament team kind of program, who can? And obviously, after kind of a rough first year, it's been great. He's consistently overachieved, you know, expectations, or in the case of, you know, this year, 2 years ago, achieved very high preseason expectations. And it's great. And I think, you know, the city, it's a very pro sports city. It's a very fickle city. I'm a Houstonian. I love Houston. It's my hometown. But I think if you looked at, if you listed off all the adjectives for Houston fans and Houston pro sports fans, I don't know if loyal and staying through thick and thin would be near the top of the list. But I think what's great about this Final Four appearance is that there's going to be some buzz. There's going to be some momentum around the program for a good while after this. That Houston basketball is going to become, you know, a trendy thing in the Houston area. People beyond just the Houston fan base, beyond people like me who are going to follow it year in, year out, regardless, it's actually going to be an interesting thing to the casual Houston fan or the non-alumnus. And I think that's just kind of the gift that keeps on giving from having this kind of appearance.
You make a great point about, obviously, for you guys to get back to the climb of the mountain, you know, to the top of the mountain like you have with Sampson. That's kind of like in a different respect with Dooley for ECU. Coming back, he had had a good time, the first time around, the youngest coach at that time. In Division I and NCAA, and you know, and the bad circumstance of getting fired, he does his time at Kansas, Florida Gulf Coast, and then he comes back to us. And I just want to get your take, and then we'll come back. But from you following the American at East Carolina, what was your take on Jaden Gardner leaving?
I think it was unfortunate. It wasn't surprising, not so much because of what's going on at ECU this year, but because of what you're seeing around college basketball. I mean, I think and this is probably an old number now, but there were well over 1,000 guys in the portal as of last week. There are more guys in the portal right now than there are spots for guys in the portal. And it seems like just about everyone who isn't in an established situation isn't with a team that's a proven winner. And even lots of guys who are with teams that are proven winners right now are going out there. I think you're seeing kind of the general reaction to this very special circumstance, this one-time eligibility, you know, eligibility freebie you could transfer without penalty. And I think I was frustrated, or it was frustrating because I, you know, really do think that having a guy like guys like Jaden Gardner don't grow on trees. Guys like Jaden Gardner, you know, aren't a dime a dozen, even for a program like Houston, a guy who put up Jaden Gardner's numbers, a guy who had Jaden Gardner's skill set. You know, we've had some good players come through our program, but I can't name a lot of Houston Cougar players. I can't name more than one or two Houston Cougar players that I would definitively take over Jaden Gardner if I could put together a starting five tomorrow of AAC guys. And I think, you know, I'm curious to see what he does at the next stage, because he is a great talent, because he's a guy, you know, I think can play for just about anyone in the country. But it's frustrating because I did think that surrounded with the right guys, and I do think in a normal season, I think we kind of talked about this in the last episode, but it's a frustrating what if, you know, ECU plays this season with this group of guys in a season where you don't have the context of COVID-19, if you don't have COVID-19 in the background.
Exactly.
I'm not saying it means, you know, ECU is the league champion or anything like that, but I don't, you know, I didn't just see what I saw from ECU beating Houston very comfortably in Greenville. I remember the game after that, y'all pushed Memphis, a very good Memphis team, a Memphis team that for the last month and a half of the season, I think was playing better basketball than anyone in this league, not named Houston. You pushed Memphis to the brink at Memphis, and just that's not an easy thing to do. And I think it kind of says there's something there, but I think it's really just figuring out the offensive end for ECU, because you saw that team get a lot better defensively, but other than the lightning and the ball they caught against Houston, when you scored 82 points and really ran Houston off the court in the second half, you know, when I watched ECU, you couldn't get 40 minutes of really good offense, even with Jaden Gardner, even with a guy like Tristan Newton, who I think is a guy with a lot of potential, a guy I think is worth building around. And I think if ECU holds on to him, I think that's something worth building around there. But really, I think any player that was really good and not on A1 top 10 or 15 tournament kind of team, there's at least some risk that they're going to go in the portal and at least see what the interest is, if not land at a new institution.
With us right now, joining us, Kyle Barber. What's up, dude?
What's going on, guys? I had to take a phone call, but now I am back. And talking about Jaden transferring out, and, you know, it's kind of been the talk of ECU basketball the last few days, and other players transferring out. I saw Memphis is having several players transfer out.
I think three today, I think.
Yeah, after they won the NIT. So, I mean, it seems to be the cool thing to do now is transfer. And I don't like this rule. I don't like the being able to transfer one time without having to sit out. I think it's a terrible rule. And I think it's made college basketball a complete mess. And hopefully it doesn't continue over into football, but it's a bad rule. And I think it's going to be regretted very, very fast.
Well, guys, I haven't read the whole thing, but I know the Supreme Court today heard arguments about, of course, amateurism with the NCAA. They pushed them very hard, but they also were talking about pretty much just opening up a slippery slope, so to speak. And I really believe, as I said before, guys like Jaden, guys that potentially or may not make the NBA, want to get paid now because they're not going to get paid at the next level. And then you have a situation of likeness and image, you have all that stuff. And then now you have, with this new rule, it's basically a free agency for college basketball. It's what you've done. You've created a huge mess, something that sounds good on paper, or they should say, quote unquote, fair, because, you know, the coaches get to leave, but we don't. There's a reason why they made them sit for a year, is so that you wouldn't have a complete mess that you've created now.
Well, I mean, it's like scholarships have been devalued. You know what I say? I say let's do this. I say we pull the scholarships. We just pay them, and then it's their responsibility to pay their way into college or get loans and grants if they can. Let's just pay them. Let's just put them all, do away with scholarships. Let's put them all on salary, treat them like employees, and then if their responsibility to figure out how to pay for school, and hopefully you can get a grant, or if not, you can take a student loan and have to pay it back like everybody else.
If you can't shoot through corners, we're going to fire you.
Yeah, and if you suck, well, you're off the team. You ain't on scholarship anyway. We're going to go ahead and just kick you off the team. You ain't got to worry about a transfer portal. So careful what you ask for. You just might get it.
Yeah. Well, you know, and another thing that people don't realize, you guys both do, but a lot of people don't, that scholarships are not 4 years anyway. They're year to year.
Right.
So you don't have a 4-year guarantee, but Sam,
most of the time you do.
Yeah. I mean, most of the guys are going to get a free ride. Sam, let's talk about, we can talk about that later. Let's talk now about, because we're excited for you guys to be in the Final Four. Let's talk about how many tickets will Houston have access to, knowing that we have COVID-19? Do you know offhand?
I'm not sure. I think the allotment's a little bigger because they're playing these last couple of games at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, the Pacers place. Although I will say, and I hope this is something that continues once we, you know, get into a time with a normal NCAA tournament. I liked having the early round games on campus sites. I liked having games like you had some games at Bloomington, you had some games at Butler. Yeah, I thought that's cool. I think having games on campus, I think, improves the quality of play. I think you saw in some of these first games at Banker Life Fieldhouse that teams, you know, getting used to the kind of the pro stadium background, and you've seen in Final Four games too, games played at like football stadiums and stuff like that. You have a lot of really bad shooting games because guys, you know, you're shooting on a background that's just so different than what you're used to. But I think I know they're having a slightly bigger allotment just because the bigger arena. I'm not sure offhand. I think a few hundred, but it's one of those for each round game. U of H puts out there like, hey, you can request tickets to this. I know people I know a couple guys I actually went to school with, associated with the Hispanic Alumni Association. Got tickets because they were in leadership there, and that kind of, you know, bumps you to the top and things like that. Obviously, family. Worth noting here, I'm glad you mentioned this, noted Houston mattress tycoon Jim McInvale, who made a big public show of betting $1 million on the Cougs. I think it was the Elite Eight game against Oregon State. He actually paid for a charter of a number of coaches' family and wives and players, players' family. It was really awesome. And from a guy who obviously very, very noted, like, Houston business guy, but not someone who's specifically a U of H alumni, not someone who's specifically a UH booster. So I thought that was a pretty cool story.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Sam, just to ask the most obvious question in the world. What will it mean to you and the Cougar fan base if you guys were to actually win the national championship? I mean, down there, in the shadow of the Big 12 schools, Texas, TCU, et cetera, what would it mean for the Cougs to win a national championship in one of the Big 2 sports?
I think for starters, it would give the Cougars something over the other big state schools because the school in Austin, as well as Texas A&M, Baylor, the schools you mentioned, no one other than UTEP, the old Texas Western team, has a national title in basketball among Division I state of Texas schools. So off the bat, it gives you that. And I think just gives you some kind of proof of concept, if you will, that, hey, like, just because U of H didn't get the invite, you know, 25, 30 years ago to the Big 12 when the SWC split up, it doesn't mean that U of H can't compete for titles in sports, can't, you know, have a good athletic department, can't, if theoretically given the kind of money that comes with being in a bigger conference, can't continue to compete in that setting. I think there's a lot of respect for the American among the Cougar fan base. I think this isn't a situation like UConn where, you know, the fan base blames the league and just can't wait to see the end of it. But, you know, to be honest, like all of us, if we somehow luck into an invite to a bigger money league, as much as we like this league, I think all of us would like a bigger paycheck and a chance to, you know, get a fair shot at the football postseason, as much as I rail just about every opportunity I have or that I have about what a sham I think the college football postseason sure. is, especially compared to like what we're seeing now. Can you imagine a college football postseason that had this kind of excitement, yeah. that had the kind of intrigue as March Madness? I mean, it's just.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Two parts. Yeah, of course, if you have an opportunity to go to a quote-unquote Power 5 conference, you would.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. At what point, you know, all right, you mentioned UConn. Well, they're gone now. But UConn was in the American, the first year of the American. They won a national championship.
Yep.
Houston is in the Final Four, you know.
Yep.
Cincinnati, look, the only reason they lost to Georgia in the Peach Bowl was because of poor clock management at the end. UCF won a New Year's Six Bowl. I don't know how much the American can do over and over and over yeah. and over and over again before somebody realizes, okay, yeah, they deserve Power 5. I guess it would be Power 6 status. Yeah. I mean, it's nonsense. So that the term, forget the money for a minute. The money obvious is obvious. But just the term, Power 5, and they use it in basketball, even
which
though
drives me nuts. It's
well, so what does that mean? Does that mean Houston doesn't have, even though they're in the Final Four, that you don't have as much quote unquote power in basketball
yeah.
as TCU?
That's stupid.
I mean, it's moronic. It doesn't make any sense. It needs to be the first thing that needs to be done until we fix the bigger problem is. They need to have to change the term. It needs to be Autonomous Five and everybody else, because that's what it is. It's autonomy. There's no power. I mean, yeah, you have power, but it's not to me. The term gives you a disadvantage by saying you're non-power five. To me, that's a disadvantage in recruiting right there. And, you know, it's irritating. But anyway.
I mean, two of the four teams in the Final Four. Gonzaga's not in a power league. Has that stopped Gonzaga from just tearing every team they play limb from limb?
And in basketball, where there's nothing holding you back, just like in baseball, where there's nothing holding you back, look, you're able to build a program. So who's to say in football? Well, people always go, well, UCF or Cincinnati – they couldn't compete with the SEC. Well, maybe they could if they had equal, like UCF, as they built their program over the last few years. If they were considered equal to the other conferences, then why wouldn't the players have went there instead of Florida and Florida State and Miami? Why couldn't they build their program? That's the difference. Houston can build a program in basketball to compete for a national championship. So can Gonzaga. East Carolina can in baseball. You can in football. There's a glass ceiling that you can't break through because you're told repeatedly if you're not in one of these Power 5 conferences, you can't make the playoffs. I think there is such ammunition, for lack of a better term, for a lawsuit. It's right there in front of us. They say it over and over again on ESPN, et cetera. Well, you can't play for a national championship if you're in a group of five conference in football. They flat out just say it. To me, that's just grounds for an antitrust lawsuit.
Antitrust, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and the very fact that, you know what's great, Sam, is the very fact that you have a situation with Baylor and with Gonzaga when you have Houston. And look at UCLA, a perfect example of a team. Nobody, I mean, maybe outside of UCLA fans, I did not see UCLA making the Final Four. As I told you, I got three out of the four right, which normally I would get one or two out of. So I'm happy I got three out of the four for the Final Four. But the very fact that UCLA made it is crazy. And the fact that they are one of the best, you know, college basketball teams in history, big picture. But in recent times, they've been struggling, you know. But you always have to live up to Wooden. And Wooden hasn't coached there in, 45 years or more? 46 years, something like that. It's a long time that he was retired. And, you know, the man won 10 national championships in 11 years. and then they won again in 95. They've got 11 titles, but it's funny how you have them, and it's weird because they're kind of like the underdog when history, they're not the underdog because they've won so much, you know?
I mean, really, both of the teams in this Final Four with probably, I would say, the most cumulative history. I mean, Houston with, you know, the Five Slava Jammy years, Elvin Hayes before that, some good teams in the 70s, and which you just mentioned with UCLA. And, I mean, I wouldn't say Houston, UCLA's, you know, likelihood of getting the Final Four is similar. I think, you know, a number of people had Houston Final Four. I did, you did, you know, a decent number of people out there. And yet Gonzaga and Baylor, these two teams that are supposed unstoppable force, and Gonzaga's had a lot of good history in the last 5 to 10 years. But I mean, you know, your history of Gonzaga being an NCAA tournament consistent team is pretty much just this century. And Baylor, I think they hadn't made a Final Four since the late 1940s or early 50s and didn't have really much in terms of basketball history. I mean, the most notable thing that happened to Baylor basketball up until this year was, I mean, their one-time coach covering up one player murdering another. So it's like, that's been Baylor basketball's history. And yet them and Gonzaga are the two teams with the supposed inside track with, you know, the favorites certainly here. And just that's something that definitely hasn't escaped my attention here. Now we're down to the last four.
And we also have, you can put your comments if you're watching live in our comment section for Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. And, this is a great point here, guys. Johnny Robertson, one of our viewers, says, this past Monday, I was pleased to hear Jay Billis say on XM that he considers the AAC to be a major conference. That's shocking. I can't believe that coming.
Well, I think in basketball it is. I mean, I think in basketball, you got some people that aren't going to say anybody that's not in the Power Five is a major conference. But I think you got to include the American, the Big East, and the A-10 all as major conferences in basketball. To me, if you don't, you're stupid. And the Mountain West is right there, too. But definitely the American, the Big East, and the A-10.
Yeah, and the fact is, another thing, too, is it's what, guys, 357 teams in Division I for basketball?
Correct, yeah.
Versus 100, it's only 130. So, I mean, the fact that this Final Four, I think this is one of the best Final Fours we've had in a good while, because you have some interesting history with UCLA and Houston, and then you've got the two teams that everybody, in fact, another point I want to make, to be fair, is Gonzaga and Baylor most likely, if we had a Final Four last year, they were good enough to make it last year. Baylor was so good, and probably the same thing with Gonzaga, but Baylor was, I mean, so those two teams have been good for a good while, but I'm just so excited for you guys because, again, if you guys can do it, we can do it. And I want to tell Pirate fans, Pirate Nation's hurting over the whole Jaden Gardner thing, but it's definitely concerning. But the good news is we have plenty of time. Where Jaden leaves, there are other good players out there too that we can get. It'll work out. I really believe it'll work out for the best interest of East Carolina. I really do. And that's, I know people are probably thinking I'm nuts to say that. It's not spin. It's the way I feel.
I don't see how it can be a positive to lose Jaden, but we'll see.
Like I said the other night, the one thing, this is like, if you look at it, guys, free agency or trade, whatever you want to call it, not a trade, but free agency. We need, if we in the free agency, AKA the transfer portal, we need 3-point shooting desperately. I know that it sounds like I'm a beat a dead horse, but that's what we need. Jaden Gardner does not shoot threes.
Right. Well,
we desperately need it.
We still could have gotten 3-point shooters and kept Jaden. But
if we could get that, I'm just saying that. But I'm just
that,
saying
that would have been even better. See, then, you know, you have Jaden kind of drive it inside. It ain't there. He passes it outside. Boom, hit a three. But he's gone. That's the whole thing. There's no need to try to spin it into something positive because it ain't. So he's gone. I don't care where he goes, I don't care what he does. It doesn't matter. He's gone. So the big thing now is, what are we going to do? And in the meantime and in the between time, what I'd like to see us do is, you know how Houston made the Final Four this year and hopefully on to a national championship. I think East Carolina needs to do our part to represent the American with Memphis winning the NIT, Memphis winning the NIT, Cincinnati going to the New Year's Six Bowl, Houston in the Final Four, So I think it's time for the Pirates to do their part and make the College World Series. So
there
that's
you go.
What we can do in the in-between time.
And we're going to host our – Sam, you heard it here first. Our very first Super Regional in Greenville is going to happen this year.
Yeah,
so.
Not our very first Super Regional.
In Greenville.
It would be our very first time hosting it if we made it.
Right.
I hope the committee doesn't do to y'all what they did to us in 2014, give it to Chapel Hill or
Well, we've hosted regionals, Sam.
But the
problem is, you got to basically be a national seed. You got to be unless you get upset. You got to be a top eight seed to host the Super, and that's what we're shooting for is to try to be a top eight seed and. Hopefully we'll get there. I don't know. American baseball non-conference didn't look so great.
Nope.
A few good wins here and there for teams. East Carolina had some nice wins over Duke, over North Carolina. Cincinnati had a surprising win last night over Louisville. I know the Cougars have been a little disappointing.
Had
so
a walk
far.
Off last night.
But it's going to be interesting to see. I know right now you're focused on basketball and the Cougs in the Final Four, but these four-game series in baseball that the Americans doing, not very many other conferences are doing that. So whoever does make the regionals for the American, I think it's going to be a huge advantage because regional play, man, that's always four games in three days. And you got to play double hitters lots of times, particularly if you get in a loser's bracket. So I think having to do this in conference play several weekends in a row will benefit whoever makes a regional for the American.
And I would say there's a parallel between what Houston did in basketball and what I think ECU could do this year on the baseball side. I mean, I'm not saying everyone else in the American, but ECU is bad, but I think D1 baseball said it, and I don't disagree with them this week, that if the season ended now, there would not be a postseason team in the American outside of ECU. So, there's certainly the opportunity, I think, for the Pirates to kind of do what the Cougars did, come out of the end of conference play with a pretty nice and gaudy record and, get yourself in a good position for seeding. If you gentlemen were expecting a full-throated defense of how the Cougars have done this year in baseball, it's not coming. It has not, the conference has not been kind to this team. And I think what you were talking about with the four-game series, I think it also kind of exposes your pitching. I mean, a lot of teams in the sport can hit, but if you don't have that depth of pitching to go a four-game series, I think your postseason hopes are kind of limited. And certainly, I would say my team has not shown itself one capable of throwing a lot of pitching out there in a weekend series. And yeah, I think it's good. I think it's kind of a postseason advantage. And I think to the bigger picture, I think it could work out for ECU pretty well that no one else in this league has really shown themselves capable of being an NCAA tournament team outside of Greenville.
Hey, who would be right now the second best team in the league?
Central Florida, I would say.
UCF, okay.
I mean, Wichita has a good record. I think there's some questions about who they played, but I mean, they could be one of those teams that emerges out of conference play. But I think it's just UCF. UCF took some good non-conference games in there, but again, I don't. If the tournament came out right now, I don't think UCF would be in the field, and I don't think they would have much of a grievance for not being in the field.
Right, Lafayette will be played though, so we'll see.
Yep,
it is. It's weird how not to have the typical midweek games. That's going to be hard for me to get used to.
Yeah, I really don't understand the point of it. I do think that, like I said, there can be some advantages if you make a regional for these four game weekend series, but I don't understand why we're not having midweek games. I understand about COVID and conference play, but I really don't understand. I don't get how. I mean, I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to minimize not getting your conference games in. You're not playing a midweek game. That's less travel. But I really don't see a lot of point in not playing a team from down the road, because that's what you do typically in midweek games. You play a regional team. But it is what it is.
I have one question for you. Being this is kind of a no pun intended, inside baseball question when it comes to inside the program, if you will. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and say that you guys win the national championship. I'm giving you a hypothetical.
I like this hypothetical so far.
Okay. Yeah. So you're going to win the national championship. with Coach Sampson. How much pressure does that put on the football program with Dana Holgorsen, with him?
I think it's already kind of about maxed out. I mean, maybe a small amount more, just because you could say, you know, basketball has a national title. But I think you'd already see that argument. And, well, basketball made the Final Four. So I think that's already pretty maxed out. I think at this point, the fan base, people who are patient, people who are not patient, it's basically at this point, it's the same expectation. You know, you finally got a conference schedule that misses Cincinnati, misses UCF. You finally got a non-conference schedule where you didn't end up getting BYU or Oklahoma on it. I think the toughest team we've gotten non-conference is Texas Tech, and Texas Tech's coming off their worst couple year stretch, I think, since Mike Leach was there. Certainly probably the Tuberville years maybe thrown in there too. So the 9-10 wins right there is there for you on a silver platter, kind of the same way it was for Major Applewhite in the 2018 team. You know, the same way I think if in a normal year we'd be able to achieve 8-4 against last year's schedule, I would have been thrilled because that was a tough schedule. And if we go 8-4 against this year's schedule, it doesn't mean squat to me. It means you went 8-4 against a schedule where you should have won 9 or 10 games. So, but I think to your original question here, I think maybe it ramps up the pressure marginally, but I think that's already there. I think the fact that this team went to the Final Four, the fact that this team is now an every year NCAA tournament contender, you know, a team that's going to at least be a threat to go into the second weekend, the sport, it's already there. And to some extent it's fair because you're paying the staff a lot of money. To some extent it's not fair because, you know, the football postseason and, you know, what goes into building a football program versus what goes into building a basketball program. I wouldn't say it's easier, but you know, you gotta take a lot more swings on guys. There's just building the rosters are different, but I think the point does remain that the expectations are very, very high. I think the time that they've been given for roster clear out, for bringing your guys in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that's done. And yeah, I think having a program on your campus doing what Cougar men's basketball is doing, you know, I think ramps up the pressure even more. But you know, I think it's also, it is good to have those positive vibes. I think going to the Final Four, you know, that's a rising tide that lifts all boats, so to speak. It increases engagement across the board. So that's the positive, but you know, it comes with that the expectations, obviously.
Yeah, no, I haven't liked Dana Holgorsen's goofy ass since he made the comment about East Carolina and Marshall being the reason. I forget the exact question. But when he was at West Virginia.
Feed his players.
Yeah, when he was at West Virginia, schools like East Carolina and Marshall are the reason we can't feed the players, meaning cost of attendance, et cetera, saying that group of five schools were the reason at the FBS level, the Power Five couldn't do what they wanted. And now, look, he's at a group of five school making a lot of money. So, you know, he's a clown to me. Sorry if you like him, but he's a clown.
It was wrong for him. He went way, to me, in my opinion, I liked him, but he made that comment was way over the line, especially when he was friends with Ruffin McNeil.
Yeah. And he looks like Murdoch from the A-team.
Oh, man.
Can't argue that one.
Have you ever noticed that he looks like Murdoch from the A-team?
I never thought about that. I do love that. That's one of my favorite shows growing up as a kid. Now you've got me now in my head. I've got an earworm of that theme song in my head. But anyway, called the A-team. Yeah. But as far as let's talk about the other teams in the Final Four. We're talking about that. How about Gonzaga making a second Final Four appearance? Mark Few, I didn't know this. Bubba told me this earlier. Year 22 with the Bulldogs. I mean, that's just crazy how he stayed with that program. And they've made the tournament, like, I believe every single year, if my memory serves me right.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Minnesota, probably the 10th or 11th best job in the Big Ten, actually poached Gonzaga's coach way back in the day, Dan Monson. And Mark Few is Dan Monson's top assistant. It's kind of wild to think in 2021 that Minnesota at one time was able to get Gonzaga's coach. You know, one of those things that changes over the years. But, you know, I got to watch a decent amount of him this year. And I don't think I've seen a better offensive team in, I would say, 24, 25 years from being a kid to now of actually physically watching teams. They're just so good. They're good on the perimeter. They're a team that regularly, I think they has, it's been since the beginning of last season that they haven't shot, I think it was like 50% or something inside the arc. Just absurdly efficient on offense, a good defensive team. And I think what makes them so dangerous is they're now recruiting at a high level. They're no longer, right. They're no longer having to kind of, you know, make it work with, you know, three-star West Coast guys or good players. I mean, they've had a lot of really good players come through that program that maybe weren't evaluated right out of high school. But, you know, they're now, I think the number one player in the class of 2021, Chet Holmgren, is seriously considering Gonzaga. Jalen Suggs was a guy who had a ton of offers from big leagues to play quarterback for them. He elected to play basketball at Gonzaga. So they're getting big recruits now, but they're still doing a great job evaluating people. I think this isn't going to be the last year Gonzaga's really, really good. This might be the best of a bunch of really good teams, but this isn't a team that's going anywhere anytime soon. I think that's not really a hot take to say that. I mean, they made the championship game. What was that, like several years ago against North Carolina? Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, yeah. Not like this is their first trip deep in the tournament, but I think they went from being kind of the Cinderella, the, you know, the cute random West Coast team that right. you only think about come mid-March, to okay, this is a pretty good team, this is a 3-6 kind of team, to this is one of the best 4 or 5 teams in the sport in any given year. And it's been impressive to see, and impressive that, kind of like you pointed out, that Mark Few stuck it out for 20 plus years to kind of see this from cute Cinderella to terrifying, you know, force of nature.
Well, they were able to build a program because they can in basketball. You think of Boise State, yep. What they've done in football, that they had a glass ceiling. They couldn't build. They got stuck where they were, whereas Gonzaga could keep building because they could legitimately try to get to the point where they could win a national championship.
And I think I think West Coast basketball talent, kind of the same way I think probably before that, you know, Southern basketball talent, Texas basketball talent, you know, I think a lot of people tend to, you know, focus on the major metros, you know, kind of in the upper Midwest and on the East Coast. And there's a lot of people out here in this part of the country. There's a lot of good basketball players. And I think Gonzaga, for some part of their history, if not present day, are benefiting from, you know, maybe one, the Pac-12 being kind of inconsistent, and two, just players out here maybe not being evaluated the same way, you know, a player maybe in the New York City area, or a player in the Chicago area, or, you know, insert name of East Coast city, you know, gets evaluated. It's impressive to see it, you know.
No doubt. How about Baylor? Their third ever trip to the Final Four, the first time since 1950. None of us on this podcast were alive when the last time that they did that. And then how about the fact that it's been 18
years? Born in 51.
Yeah, 52, but who's counting? 18, year 18 for Scott Drew. I forgot that he's been there that long. And then, like you talked about earlier, Sam, we were just talking about that they had one player kill another player. I mean, that was just that is just crazy to think about that mess went on. And then he comes in, does a nice job. And like I said, last year, you could argue they had a good chance to win the national championship last year, which was sad because they didn't have, you know, a tournament to have that shot. They do have their shot this year. But what are your thoughts on Baylor?
You know, their roster construction is interesting. We talked about this when we were previewing Baylor on our episode last night. They don't have anyone who qualifies as a blue chip on this roster, you know, top 30, top 35 guys. They have good recruits. I think a good chunk of the guys they brought in as high schoolers are top 100 or top 120 guys. But, you know, they've done it with evaluating good, like getting guys who were well-rated prospects, but not guys who were one and done, not guys who were going to spend less than 2 or 3 years in the college ranks, guys who they could bring in and develop. And I think they did a really good job finding guys from mid-majors who they believed fit their culture, they believed have the skill to, you know, play for a Big 12 program. As much as I hate giving any kind of deference to the Big 12, as someone, an alumnus of a school in the Big 12's footprint who's not a Big 12 school, but that league is a good basketball league year in, year out. That's a brutal league to play in, year out. And they found guys like Macy Oteague, I believe from UNC Asheville, Adam Flagler from Presbyterian, guys, you know, didn't play for big time programs before this, but guys who the Baylor staff kind of, you know, saw as contributors, and just a really good mix of transfers who maybe kind of flew under the radar, good recruits, but not guys who, you know, were thinking NBA or the pros after a year. And just, I think, as much as I hate giving Baylor credit for anything or saying nice things about Baylor, Scott Drew is a hell of a coach. Scott Drew clearly is getting the most out of his roster. I mean, the stats, it's terrifying. I mean, they're a 41% three-point shooting team. I mean, if your best three-point shooter is shooting 41%, you're doing pretty decent. And they're doing it as a team. I think they have five guys who are shooting 40% or better from deep. They're great at getting looks. They're a very unselfish team that he's very clearly like understood what his rotations are. And a guy I really like on their team, Mark Vidal, I would say the most Charles Barkley-esque player since Charles himself. I mean, how many other 6'5", 250 power forwards are there in the sport right now? You know, I thought that was a real fun player on their roster, but I think they built it kind of the same way that a lot of teams have gone deep in this tournament, not by getting one and done guys, not by getting cream of the crop guys, but by getting good players who are willing to be coached, willing to stick around for at least two or three years in the college game, and guys who maybe got undervalued as recruits out of high school, but who have proven themselves at other schools against Division I competition. It's not that dissimilar to what Houston's done, because, you know, Dejon Giroux and Quentin Grimes were both top 50 recruits out of high school, but, you know, Giroux goes to UMass, they have a coaching change, he decides to go to Houston. Quentin Grimes goes to Kansas, his disappointing freshman year, comes to Houston, develops there, and Houston's recruited a fair amount of top 100-ish, but not really blue-chip high school guys. So, you know, I think there's more than a few similarities between how the Cougars and Bears put their roster together.
Very excited to have with us, joining us, one of our favorite guests back with us to talk about the Final Four, former ECU men's basketball coach, Coach Mike Steele. How are you, Coach?
I'm great. How are you guys? Sorry, I'm running a little late.
That's okay. We've had a lot of fun talking to our good friend Sam Raz of the Scott and Holman podcast. They actually cover Houston, Coach, and very excited for them to. I have three out of the four teams in the Final Four, so I'm very happy. I had a good year.
You know, it looked like it was going to be awful, but I think our last time we talked, I thought Baylor and Gonzaga would be there, and then, you know, the other ones I wasn't sure of. But I don't think anybody saw UCLA, who had to do the play-in game to go overtime to beat Michigan State, that they would be there. But I'm telling you, Calvin Sampson is – he's a good coach. And the guy at UCLA, Mick Cronin, they're the same. They're both tough as nails. And, you know, they're going to punch you in the mouth. And that's what they did to Michigan. I watched the game and – like the first 5 minutes, they knocked Michigan down every time they could. And Michigan finally just, you know, didn't respond.
It was like watching Cronin's old Cincinnati teams, really.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, without question. You know, Mick, he grew up in Cincinnati. His dad was a high school coach. He would have stayed there forever. But Cincinnati didn't offer him the contract extension that they should have, because they were disappointed that they – he won 20. It was almost like the Steve Logan era that we had, where he won between 20 and 25 games every year. He got to the Final 16, but he couldn't get past that. So now he's in the Final Four. He just didn't take Cincinnati with him. Yeah. They never should have let him go. And he never would have left. But they just felt like going to the Sweet 16 was not good enough. And now they're in disarray, and UCLA is UCLA.
No doubt, and they've got a great coach. And, Coach, speaking of staying a long time, Mick is the kind of guy, like you're talking about, loyal guy. He can stay there and build something special for UCLA they haven't had in, what, 10, 15 years?
A long time.
In a while.
No, and, you know, he's tough. I'm telling you, he is tough. I've been to his practices. He makes Mike Krzyzewski look like a nice guy. He's so tough. Or Bob Huggins look like a nice guy. I had to take it. The first time I went to practice, I had to take Drew out of practice after 20 minutes, and he's heard every bad word that I've ever said. But Mick took it to another level. And that was after we had lunch with Mick, and Mick is just the nicest, quietest guy. And the first time one of those guys missed a layup in warm-up, like in practice, he went crazy and he stayed crazy. But you know what? Like his guys, when he went to UCLA, my thought was, I don't know if he can get those guys to buy into how tough you have to be. And when you hear those guys do interviews, the only thing they talk about is when Coach Cronin came here, the ones that stay, we're going to be tougher than anybody else. And now they're big believers.
No doubt. I mean, to go to the Final Four, I was just talking about how interesting it is, Coach, that you have Gonzaga and Baylor as favorites when you have the history of the programs of Houston and UCLA that have the history, but not in recent times.
No.
And then you have two guys like you have two teams like Gonzaga and Baylor that you would think those are the underdogs when this year is more likely, and no offense to Sam, that Houston and UCLA are more the underdogs.
Yeah, they are, but I think that if I was going to take the four teams and take the two teams in a fight, I would take the two underdogs every time. Now, I don't know if they're talented enough to beat those teams, but in a fist fight, I'm taking those two teams.
So you think that is there a chance that Houston and UCLA could be playing for the national championship game?
Well, if they're not, it's going to be because the other ones are just too talented. But if it's a fist fight, and if the referees let them play, yeah, I mean, UCLA had to beat Michigan State, and they've beat everybody else since then, and their best player's out with an ACL tear, and it's going to be a fist. If it's a fist fight, they have a chance. If not, if they call it real close, then Gonzaga's just too talented.
No doubt about it. You know, Sam, with the time remaining we have with you, I know you have to go here in a couple minutes. Just tell us your final thoughts, getting ready for what are you hearing from the fans as far as are you guys going to have any kind of big celebration where everybody can go? I know it's kind of hard in the COVID world, or is there any kind of like virtual kind of deal?
They've had some stuff down. They've had some stuff downtown Houston. Actually, Houston's campus is about 3-4-ish miles from downtown. They've had some COVID-friendly events there. Some big watch parties and stuff. I think a lot of people have been asking them to have something at TDECU Stadium or the arena. I think the stadium would be better just because the arena. Yeah, outside. Yeah. Also, just it's not. By design, it's just not a big arena. They designed it for every seat to be a good seat rather than, you know, cramming 12 or 13,000 in there. So they haven't announced it yet. U of H likes to leave things to the last minute, but I hope they do. I hope they do have something for the fans in Houston because there's just a lot of buzz around the program. And I agree with what Coach just said. It's Houston's going to be an underdog in this one. I do think Houston, there are scenarios where Houston can't out tough Baylor. There's scenarios where UCLA can't out tough Gonzaga, but you know, rightfully they'll be the underdog. I will say, I don't hate Kelvin Sampson having 5 days to prepare for Baylor. I don't hate that a team of junkyard dogs on this Houston roster are going to spend the next several days hearing about how Baylor's the best team since sliced bread, the best offensive team in a while. Those guys have been hearing it. Those guys were hearing it when they heard all about Jim Boeheim's son being the
Sam,
best,
does
shooter.
Does it help you guys get fired up even more as it would for East Carolina, the fact that Baylor is a Big 12 school and in the state of Texas?
There's no love between Baylor and Houston. There's a lot of bad blood that Baylor canceled the football game that was supposed to be played this year, extremely last minute. And just, you know, really just any former Southwest Conference school, whether it's, you know, TCU, SMU, Baylor, the school in Austin, Texas A&M. There's gonna be some bad blood there, even if the bad blood and actual on field contests haven't been happening much since I was a small child.
You know what, Sam? No. Sam, the other thing though is that the flip side of that is those teams have been able to beat teams that have had some freshmen playing, and so like Baylor's got a bunch of seniors, and Gonzaga has a bunch of seniors, and that's different than what these two teams have been able to beat. And if they get through the first 5-8 minutes and if they don't call it close, and they haven't been calling it very close, then I think that if they call it close in Gonzaga, both those teams will win. But if they don't call it close and make it a, you know, make it a fight, then those two teams are the best fighters.
No question. By the way, Sam, where are you watching the game? And then we'll let you go.
I'll be watching it from my couch here in beautiful and sunny Southwest Las Vegas there on Saturday afternoon.
You're supposed to give me some kind of great story so that Coach Steele will be impressed. Like, you're going to the Strip, you're going to bet a whole bunch of money, one of the sports books. You got to give us something there.
Hey,
and you're talking about you're going to be on the couch.
Sam said hookers and cocaine for everyone. If you
he can't top the chewing tobacco from Kyle, so that don't even try.
All right, look, this is true. Look, you know what? I got my Taylor Pride and my spit bottle right here, Coach. So,
okay, no, I wish I was there. you know, I know you guys have probably talked about it, but what are the thoughts about Jaden leaving?
My initial thought went to Coach Dooley coming into year four of his contract and losing his best player. It puts him in a tough situation. You know, I don't know what expectations are next year, but I do know that after year four, you typically got to extend or you got to make a decision. So I hate that for him, losing his best player going into year four, particularly with the kid from BC coming in. I thought, you know, with him coming in and Jaden, and maybe we could get some outside shooting from somewhere, that we'd have a chance to be really good next year. And I'm certainly not giving up on next year, but that's my first thought. Not so much where Jaden's going, but it sucks for Dooley.
Oh, no, I agree. I feel bad for all the coaches. Unfortunately, this is going to be the era that we're going to live in, because I just saw where Syracuse had three starters. They went to the final.
Coach, I'm having trouble hearing you. Are you?
You know, we are in a terrible position because I don't know if.
Is Coach on his phone? Is he covering up his mouthpiece somehow?
Coach, yeah, we're having trouble hearing you for a second. We need to let Sam run. Sam, promote everything, and we'll let you get out of here, because I know Coach wants to talk a lot about Jaden, and I don't want to keep you.
I'll leave the floor. You can follow us on Twitter at SHPAWDcast, or go to our website, www.shpawdcast.com. If you want to hear how this team got here and kind of a little bit more details of how the Cougars got from – you know, round of 64 to present day. You can subscribe to Scott Holm podcast or catch episodes anywhere you get podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, all those good places. We're there. We're going to be talking more general AAC once the season's done, once we have a little bit more roster clarity as the transfer madness comes to a conclusion, hopefully at some point here in the next few months. But find us in any of those places. Always great to talk with y'all. Always great to come on. Hopefully I'm going to come back and talk to y'all about the 2021 national champion Houston Cougar men's basketball team at some point. That's my sincere.
There you go. Hey, Sam, and I'll say one more final thing. The only time you'll ever hear me say this on the show, go Cougs. We're going to be pulling hard for you, all right?
Go Cougs. Take care, everybody.
All right. Good night. I love Sam Raz. A great guy. And speaking of great guys.
Can you hear me? Hopefully, Coach. Keep talking.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you right now. Yep.
Okay. No, I feel terrible for Coach, and I feel terrible for the players. But, you know, like if a program like Syracuse can lose three starters and be in the final 16 and two of them are freshmen, there's 1,200 players now. Almost 25% of the players on scholarship are in the
portal. Wow.
They're in the portal. And Syracuse's women's team got to the final 16. They have 8 girls in the portal.
Oh, my God.
It's just awful, in my opinion. I thought the one and done was the worst rule that the NCAA could possibly come up with, and this one is 10 times worse. It's 10 times worse.
Well, I don't understand what's going through the kid's head. I agree with you. It's a terrible rule, being able to transfer one time without having to sit out. But I just don't know why everybody wants to transfer. Maybe it's just the youth of today. But, you know, you mentioned all these
teams, they don't have to work for anything.
Teams that are having success, You know, Memphis just won the NIT. They're having three players transfer. I don't understand the logic in a lot of this.
Kyle, I'm gonna give you a couple logics. The first one is, you know, these kids, because of social media, a lot of these kids played on AAU teams together, yeah. And they see what the NBA is doing. You know, guys are going to play with the Brooklyn Nets. They're going to go play with LeBron. And a lot of these kids are, you know, interacting every day. And they're like, let's go play together at X. Or let's the two of us go and play wherever. We're friends. And then the other thing I think that has really hurt East Carolina. East Carolina is a school that has always had a great atmosphere for social life. And this past year, there's been no social life.
Yeah.
And in Jaden's case, I just think he could not find a better place to go than East Carolina. That's just my opinion. And I think he's getting lots of information from outside that they think he's going to go play at a higher level and play out on the perimeter. And in my opinion, he's going to have to really improve dribbling, shooting, and passing because he's not very good at any of those. He's really good at playing unbelievably hard and playing. They list him at 6'7" or 8". He's probably 6'5".
Yeah.
I just don't know. I think it's a horrible decision. That's just my decision. And I wish the kid the best of luck. He's really a good kid. But boy, I think he's getting some bad advice.
Well, Coach, that was what I was going to – we've been talking about. We talked about the other night. We've been hearing about this for two straight years. And let me make another point. Let me make one more point about this whole thing. Do you remember – you guys remember when it was after his freshman year – and all these people started rumors of speculating of, God, I would hate for Jaden to transfer. And he comes out and says, no, I'm not going to transfer. I'm not going to transfer. Yes, I'm that guy for bringing it up. Because I think that we need to educate these kids that there's a thing called legacy. There's a thing called your word. And the team was built around Jaden. Coach could have got rid of him. Not saying he would, but he purposely kept Jaden and to build the team around Jaden. And that's the problem I have is his dad, and I love, you know, not anti him, but his dad has been telling him that you need to go to a bigger school. And hey, this is what he's telling him. So Jaden's listened to his dad. So I'm taking up for Jaden here. Jaden's hearing all these people tell him that if he goes to a quote unquote bigger school, that means you have a chance to go to the NBA. He could go to, there's a guy named Blue Edwards, you know, Coach.
Yeah.
Did he have to go to a bigger school to make the NBA?
He was the 11th guy picked in the draft.
That's correct.
He had a great coach, but go ahead.
Yeah. No, but I'm just saying that my point is it's kind stupid.
Dave, it's stupid. And I know, like, I don't think his mom had any idea this was going on. I think his dad's been peddling him since January to all these other schools.
Yep.
But with the idea that he's going to have to play on the perimeter. And the games I went to this year, every time he'd be on the perimeter, I'd say, God, they got to get him in the post where he can get fouled.
Yes.
And
yes.
I don't know who he's going to guard on the perimeter. I just think I don't know. But I think it's the new era. And one of the reasons you don't transfer is because you got to sit out a year. Now, I mean, thank goodness I'm not coaching now because I was pretty tough on guys. And then I'd hug them up. Now you can be tough on them, and the next day you don't have time to hug them up because they're gone, and they're playing right away. Terrible.
Well,
terrible for college athletics.
No doubt about it, and it's a situation now. Let me ask you this question: when you have Coach Dooley, who's trying to build a program, and you know how difficult it is at East Carolina with basketball, how do you build a program when your roster is going to be changing every single year? Before you came on, I call it the free agency of college basketball, a.k.a. the transfer portal now.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure that if I was at East Carolina, I would ever recruit another high school kid until – I mean, you think about it. Like, if you get a really good player like the kid that went to Syracuse and he had to sit out a year, well, now – if you get a really good player he's gonna go where he thinks it's greener.
Well,
and yep. You know, like I listened to Boeheim do an interview, and they said, "What are you gonna do?" And he goes, "Well, looks like we're just gonna go take players from other teams. It's like the NBA. We're just gonna go take players from other teams."
You know what I would do if I was coach of East Carolina? I'd cheat. I would make every recruiting violation I could, get all the star players I could, because if you don't get caught, great. If you get caught, then we suck like we always have.
The only problem with that, Kyle, is we have no money. That's the only problem.
Well, that's a good point, Coach. That's always a pesky problem, that old no money thing. It'll screw everything up.
You know, when I was coaching, assistant AD came in during Christmas, and he brought in a bag. It was a paper bag, and he said, "Coach, don't tell anybody I did this." And he brought in, it was full of 2-for-1 Burger Kings. And I said, "Have you ever been on a road trip with guys that have eaten Burger King for 2 straight weeks? Come on now." But that was the mindset. Here, let me ask you guys this. I've been thinking about this, and I don't understand. You know, Navy plays football in our conference.
Sure.
And they don't do anything else. Why would we not play football in our conference and then have everybody else in either the Southern Conference, the Big South, the CAA, where you can get on a bus? Like, if we were in the CAA, our facilities in basketball would not be close to the best, but they'd be in the middle of the road, and we'd have a chance. We have as good a chance of winning the CAA tournament as we do finishing first, second, or third in this conference. But the travel, the cost, does that not make sense?
I actually think John Gilbert has addressed that, and not for basketball.
Well, the problem.
But if he had his druthers, he would love to see the NCAA allow regional conferences form just for Olympic sports, and have just football and basketball be played in the quote-unquote, you know, the money. They're the two sports that make the money. They get the TV contract. So they're the two sports that are played in the American, for example, and then the Olympic sports would be played, the non-revenue Olympic sports would be played in a regional conference. But that's something that hasn't happened yet. I'm sure, you know, it's a good point. I'm sure Cliff, he probably enjoys playing baseball in the American, though the argument could be made that the Colonial may have better baseball at times than the American.
You know what, Kyle? We've won in baseball forever. I don't care who's coaching.
True enough.
And I think Cliff, I love Cliff. But when you're playing the first 20 games of people that are playing in the snow and then they come here, I mean, and the you can recruit within 50 miles of here because we have great baseball. And Cliff's a great coach. But if you do that, like, there's no reason for our basketball team or our women's basketball team to go play in Texas. And so if you went to the CAA, you have a chance to not only compete, but you have some rivalries. It just makes so much sense, because this conference we're in is, in my opinion, is the worst conference we could possibly be in, because we're not in the Power Five, but we're in a conference that can't take non-qualifiers, which Skip Holtz, 12 of his 13 guys that went and played in the NFL were non-qualifiers. The last time when Coach Lebo won in April, which is probably the only coach in the history that's won a game in April, we won that conference. We had 3 non-qualifiers in that group.
Yeah, I've always thought that this conference, you know, that's an old Big East rule. And I always thought when this conference became the American and was not included in what was the BCS then became the Power Five. I always wondered why they didn't change that rule like the rest of the non-Power Five schools, where you can take non-qualifiers. And I think it's something that should be looked at.
No, you know why they don't? It's because Houston doesn't have to do it, because they've got, you know, most of their players are within 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And Cincinnati doesn't have to do it because they're academics in the Midwest. I mean, we need to do it because the guys that are going to go to North Carolina and NC State and don't qualify, those are the ones that got us with Coach Logan and with Skip. But now we can't do that. And I do think
we can win in football without doing that. I think it's just going, you know, I think Houston's about to do that. I don't know about basketball though.
I hope so, but you know what? Those kids that were coming here are now going for the last 5 years to App or Coastal Carolina. And Coastal Carolina, if you'd have told me 5 years ago Coastal Carolina would have a great football program, there's no way. And they couldn't do it without those non-qualifiers.
No, I don't disagree with you. I've always, you know, and you kind of answered why the American doesn't do it. But, you know, they did. Cincinnati and Houston were in Conference USA, and they were taking non-qualifiers. I think East Carolina's biggest problem, particularly in basketball, is you look at Memphis, for example, and they're the number two school in Tennessee, with apologies to Vanderbilt. If you're not going to go to Tennessee, you want to go to Memphis. In Ohio, if you're not going to go to Ohio State and you want to play in state, you're going to go to Cincinnati. You know, Houston's a big city school. Obviously, they have to recruit against the Big 12, but they can get their share of players. Where that's the problem with East Carolina. If it was just East Carolina and North Carolina, or East Carolina, North Carolina, Duke even, I think it'd be a lot easier to build a basketball program, particularly now that we're in the American. But the problem is you got all these other damn ACC schools. Coach, do you think – one thing I was talking about
all – Kyle, hang on a second. Hang on a second, Kyle. First of all, I never thought I would ever say this, but – I think you're 100% correct, and it's hard for you.
Oh my God!
I can't even hardly get that out of my mouth. But go ahead.
Kind of to piggyback off that, one thing I've discussed off the air. I've always said that it's going to be hard for East Carolina to build a basketball program, particularly to compete in the American, when we can't recruit in state. And I've always thought that was the biggest thing. And you recruited here. I've always thought that was the biggest thing holding us back, that we can't get local talent. We can't get regional talent. I mean, we could if we wanted to take the third best player on the team. But do you think East Carolina can build a basketball program that can compete consistently in the American without being able to recruit local talent?
Kyle, I thought if you would ask me a year ago, 2 years ago, I would have said, boy, it's so hard. I mean – it's so hard. But now that guys can go wherever they want to go after, like, I don't know how we do it. I really don't. And anybody that doesn't think that Joe Dooley and his staff aren't working 100 hours a week, they're crazy. They're absolutely crazy. Because, when they look at a Winthrop or they look at and they go, well, how did they? Well, it's because they're playing teams that aren't very good. And they win the conference, and the guy's a good coach, but they're playing teams that aren't. We're playing teams that have got national championship banners up. If you go to if you were going to go, and let's say you're going to recruit a kid, and he's going to visit Memphis, Houston, SMU just did a $50 million renovation, Cincinnati did a $60 million renovation. You can go right through down the line. And if you said, visit all the schools that are in this conference and tell me where you want to go to school, we would be ninth or 10th or last. And if you can't get guys that pick you over someone else that's in your conference, you got a problem. I don't care who the coach is. I mean, I don't care who you have coaching. And I said, when Joe Dooley got hired, I said, if Joe can't win in this conference or be competitive, then nobody can. Well, I still stand by that.
Coach, as far as that goes, does hurt to lose Jaden, but the ultimate thing we need is three-point shooting. That's what we need really, really bad is three-point shooting. Do you think Coach has addressed that? Do you think we have that coming in? We've got.
Well, I think he's trying. Seven guys. I think he's trying, but you know, again, like if I was coaching again, at East Carolina, I would try to do what Oral Roberts did. I would try to get everybody that can shoot, and I wouldn't care how tall they are, how big they are. I would never, again, if it was me, I would never recruit another player at East Carolina over 6'8". Because if they're over 6'8", they're not going to be any good if they come. And that's just being truthful. So get guys 6'4", 6'5", and make them guard you and shoot threes and bust your butt and make it competitive. But we're not going to be able. It's like when John Thompson came in and he made the statement, we're going to go nose to nose and run the ball. No, you're not, because we're not going to have good enough players. And I'll never forget Lincoln Riley. I had dinner with Lincoln Riley, which I called him Doogie Howser for 2 years. I mean, now he's making 10 million a year. But I said, Lincoln, you tell me why it's 3rd and 1 and we can't run the ball. And he said, Coach, it's real simple. We can teach guys to step back and stand and shadow box for 3 seconds. We don't have anybody on our offensive line that can knock their guy over. And I said, okay, good answer. Thank you. Because I wondered, like, that's why we never tried to run the ball at 3rd and 1 when Lincoln was here, because we couldn't get 1 yard. And I think it's the same thing with basketball. I mean, we can't, we're not going to stop guys in the low post. We got to go get 6'4", 6'3", 6'2". I don't care if they're all 6'2". That can run and tough and easier said than done, but that's what I would do.
So in other words, what you're saying, the game is actually trending the small ball anyway, Coach. I love the front line. But as far as the backcourt, the guards, you hear that all the time about guards. But it's true. If you got to have great guards, and you got to be able to shoot incredible percentages from the 3-point line. And we haven't, last 2 years, we've struggled with that.
No, and I know that talking to Joe, that they bring guys in that have been able to shoot in the past, but have not been able to carry it. Like, I've been to not a lot of I go to practice sometimes when it's raining and I can't play golf. But otherwise, like, Duels will go, I haven't seen you. I said, well, the weather's been good. Sorry. And I watch them in practice, and, I mean, we got some guys that can really shoot, but they've not been able to carry that over to the game. And he knows that we got to have 3-point shooters. I mean, you think about it. Houston is 28-3, and we beat them. Yeah. And the reason we beat them is because we made – 12 or 13 threes.
That's great. You look over the last couple of years, there's been so many games we're close, and if we made some more threes, a few handful of threes, we win the game, where we didn't, and that's why we lost the game.
You know what, Dave? After we beat Houston,
we played. I'm having a hard time hearing you again.
Hello?
There we go. I got you now.
Okay. After we beat Houston, we played SMU and Memphis. On the road, and we lost close games, and I think we were 2 for 20 some in those two games. And that's, and I do think COVID this year really hurt us, because when we had a couple runs, then we had COVID, and then, we just didn't recover from it.
No doubt. And Coach, as far as I know, we're talking about Jaden leaving and all that, but I think with the coaching staff, it gives him time now by the announcement he's leaving. It's not like he's leaving in September or October, or he's kicked off the team. This gives us a time to, I know that everybody's saying, yeah, Dave, but it's Jaden Gardner. But at the same time, there's a lot of great players, as you mentioned, in the transfer portal that could come in and make a difference, don't you think?
Without question. I mean, I don't know if we can find anybody in the transfer portal that's tougher than him. But I guarantee you we can find guys that are his size that can go on the floor and dribble, pass, and shoot better than him.
And that's something that, again, I want to reiterate that we love Jaden Gardner. But as far as
oh, I, you know what? if we're going to go play in a pickup game, 3-on-3, he's my first choice because we're going to stay up and win the games. We're going to stay up. He's got a great heart, and he did all he could do here, but I just hate to see him leave because he had a chance to, as you mentioned, the legacy, which doesn't really seem to make any difference. But I can tell you this, after coaching Blue Edwards, if he was good enough here for the next 2 years to go to the NBA, he would go to the NBA. Right. And he's got a better chance, in my opinion, here playing 38 minutes a game than he does going somewhere playing 17 minutes a game. Right. And you know, Dave, the guy that you look at, Ralph Sampson's son that was here, and his mom and dad thought he needed to play the three spot, even though I saw him shoot 5 air balls from the free throw line. He went to Georgia Tech, and he played 10 minutes a game and played in the low post. So,
yep.
I don't know. It's a tough gig, I tell you that.
No doubt. And the fact that, you know, with Coach Houston, looks like things are going well for him. And I believe that Dooley, we're not going to see – another thing I'll make the point for Dooley is you mentioned about COVID. I don't think we're going to have COVID next year. And you know, that's going to help us.
No, I hope not. And, you know, Coach Houston, like the SMU game, it was a perfect time for the season to stop because
right. It
gave everybody like my guys, including me. We were unbelievable. And I told Coach it was the best half, maybe the best half I've ever seen East Carolina play. And when we beat Houston, it would have been a wonderful time for the season to end.
Right.
And it didn't. And so now everybody's, you know, but I think it's impossible to judge a coach during this past season with the COVID. I don't see how guys can justify like at Indiana firing their guy and paying him $10 million when everybody's talking about
that was crazy.
No, and you know, Auburn firing their guy, their football coach, and paying him $23 million because I mean he's the only guy that can beat Alabama. It makes no sense to me. This year is a wash, I think.
Well, the very fact of you were talking about that, I understand what Kyle is saying in a normal time with Coach Dooley, but how can you count? That's my argument. You know, I know it's a tough business. People are going to, you know, obviously going to be fired, hired, and all that. If you haven't been fired, one day you will be. You always hear that. But the very fact that this year you saw a lot of improvement in the non-conference, and when COVID hit, everything derailed. I just don't see how you can say next year, even though I understand that we're talking about normal times, but this is not a normal time. And I just don't think that you can count year three under Dooley. When things were going very well, COVID hits. Yes, everybody can say COVID affected everybody. But, I mean, there was that Tulane game. We had like 5, 6, 7, I don't know. It's not that many scholarship players. We go down to New Orleans. We should have won that game. We didn't have all our guys. Stuff like that happened. You know, I don't know too many guys that could win when they don't have but maybe 7 scholarship, maybe 8 scholarship guys.
No, and – I think I stand by my statement when we hired him. Like, if he can't get it done here, then without question, we're in the wrong conference, and somebody needs to look at the bigger picture. And if we got to pay to get out of this conference for the other sports besides football, then pay it. Figure out how to pay that rather than try to figure out a new coach because Joe's proven. Great recruiter. He was at Kansas, but – worked with a great program, but then he went to Gulf Coast and he had a winning season here for the first time he was here.
Yeah,
I think we've had 5 in 50 years, and that's correct. Was one of them. And
and
that was with Blue Edwards. I mean, my gosh. So I think that would be the last thing I would be worried about is like who's going to be the next coach. Like we've gone through. I mean, I can't hardly even name them all. And you know what, Dave? Ironically, Ricky Stokes was the only coach that came here that had a losing record when he came. And I went through and looked. I said, like, I won 70-some percent of our games, and Bill Herrien was the fifth winningest coach in the country percentage wise when he came, and Mac had won everywhere he'd ever been. Lebo had a winning percentage. I mean, I'm not saying all of it, everybody was a good coach, but there's been guys that can coach.
Right.
It's just a, we're in a horrible, for basketball, we're in a horrible conference, in my opinion, a horrible. And I don't know if we can, I don't know how we can survive without getting out of this conference basketball wise.
Let me ask you this, and I hear what you're saying. What about one of the things to talk about Jaden Gardner is you always hear about, you know, we got to go up so that you can get more exposure. But the kid, you, and I talk about your days of like CAA, which obviously I'm very fond of. Those were my teenage years and my college years with Eddie Payne.
Are you trying to make me feel old? But go ahead.
It was not last year I graduated. But I was talking about how our program, remember, Coach, on home team sports, we would have like three or four games a year on cable TV. And now people are complaining about an app, which streaming is the way things are going. And you've got about every single game, including now baseball and Olympic sports are on. I mean, I don't understand, like, exposure. My God, the kid was on TV every single night, every game.
No, and like – as you said with Blue, he was the 11th person picked in the draft. He could have not ever been on TV. It's not like these scouts, they're paying millions of dollars to go find guys. I mean, there's guys, you know, like the great player now, young guy at Memphis, he went to Morehead State for crying out loud. I don't even know if they have TVs there. And no, that's a horrible analogy. That a guy thinks he can go to Wake Forest and get more publicity than he's doing here. It's just, it's just a bad analogy.
No doubt. We'll have to see. We'll have you back on. Certainly we'll see how things go with the Final Four coach. And certainly we'll see about, do you think, let me ask you this and then we'll let you go. Do you think there's any more, do you know of any more players that will transfer? Because I tell you, the last couple of days, at work, on the street, different people that know we do the show and how much I love my Pirates say, oh, my God, what in the world is going on? All these players are – and I try to explain to them about the transfer portal, but are there any more players you think they're going to leave now that Jaden's gone?
You know, I don't know, but there were some that – and I won't mention their names, but there were some that went in recently that if there's a silver lining, it's the fact that they can transfer because – there were a few that had, in my opinion, had no business being able to play. They were never going to play here. So, you know, I guarantee you, Coach Rock and the rest of the guys, they're studying that. I had two guys call me today about a guy from Purdue. And, you know, there's good players out there. And if Syracuse has to rebuild from the portal, then – it's not an embarrassment that East Carolina has to read. I mean, it's 2 years from now, everybody will be doing that. The idea of recruiting high school guys might be a thing of the past.
That's crazy to say, but I totally agree with you 100%. Coach, is always a huge honor to have you on. We'll see how things go and we'll have you.
Oh, I just got all somebody right. Join me. Come here.
Hey, you.
Oh, hey.
Drew.
Hey, Drew, how are you?
Good.
So happy to have you on. You're a celebrity, man. You're upstaging. As always, you're upstaging your dad.
My dad.
My buddy. All right.
Yeah. Thanks, have a great night. Great to see you, Drew. All right. Good night. All right. I love it. I love it. Coach Mike Steele in there. Drew Steele with a cameo. That was awesome. That was awesome. Great stuff there from Coach Mike Steele. And that's Coach Mike Steele, Drew Steele. We appreciate them so much. Coach with us a long time. And we didn't expect to go this long tonight, folks, or whenever you're listening to it. But we appreciate them very, very much. I tell you what, we're very happy with, by the way, I got a couple more things and then we'll go. I want to send him a shout out. Congratulations to Mark Hessert of the Pirate Club. He retired today after 30 years, and I was going to say the beginning of the broadcast, and we got talking about Houston and basketball, and certainly we want to give our best to Mark, and he gave us 30 years. I mean, you are the best, Mark. I think a lot of you, and I know there's a lot of people in Pirate Nation that know you, and even if some that don't, that would appreciate me saying how much it means for all the hard work. And we didn't tell you enough how much you did behind the scenes for the Pirate Club, but I can tell you that I'm someone that knows your hard work, and I appreciate you very much. And I know all the fellas here, we wanted to wish you the best, and thank you for all the long days and nights and all the games and all the travel you did for Pirate Nation for that purple and gold. We know that you bleed purple and gold, and you definitely won't be forgotten. Thank you so much for that. Speaking of forgotten, how could you forget last night? Last night was why I'm tired tonight with the big win with ECU over North Carolina, 11-10, a walk-off. Huge game in Greenville last night. Some fans, unfortunately, left, and they missed the best part. Pirates played very, very well. Looking forward to the big series coming up this weekend. As a matter of fact, the next start, the start time, I believe tomorrow, is going to be 4 o'clock if my memory serves. Malcolm Gray, the SID for baseball, I believe he sent that out. It's tomorrow at 4 o'clock. So if you're thinking about going to the game, you might be able to get, who knows, maybe you put a ladder up where you can see the game. Eventually we'll be able to see all the games, and I can't wait for that. I was talking to the folks at ECU yesterday, and I think it's around the 1400 mark if you're a Pirate Club member. Those folks are allowed to get in, and they're trying really, really hard to get as many fans in as they can. It's a really tough situation with social distancing. So we appreciate all that John Gilbert and Ryan Robinson, everybody. They're trying really, really hard to get more fans in. I mean, out to the fact of the jungle, they're doing everything they possibly can. And I hope that we'll get announcements soon that we can get more fans in the stands, especially when it comes to regional and hosting our first regional coming up in June. That'll be fantastic. Want to remind you also about several other things we have coming up next week, hopefully. It looks like we're working out the schedule with Nikita Koloff, former the Russian Nightmare, and, of course, nephew of Ivan Koloff, who a lot of people know in Pirate Nation in Winterville. He actually was married our good friend Pirate Al, his wife Darlene, so we want to give him a shout-out. We're going to have him on very, very soon. We'll, of course, have Extra Innings on Sunday night, brought to you by Next Level Training Center. And you can go to nextleveltrainingcenter.com. You make sure you go to see Trent Britt there, Wimbledon Drive in Greenville. I'm telling you, folks, they're fantastic when it comes to baseball, softball. They are the experts. They've been so good to us. They have a great Facebook page. Like their Facebook page, you can read a lot of cool stuff about what they have going on and all the different guys and gals that have come through there. They always give them shout outs of what they're doing at their respective universities and maybe even the major leagues. The case for baseball, for sure. Also, speaking of baseball, want to give a shout-out to Mark Minakazi for PGXGloves.com. We appreciate him for all that he has done for the program. And certainly, I tell you what, they do so much at PGXGloves.com, and we can't say enough great about them. They're just fantastic. In fact, they have lots of cool stuff. PGXGloves.com, custom baseball gloves. They have batting gloves. Personalized things, youth stuff. They have football gloves. Those would be their golfers like Coach Mike Steele. Get your golf gloves, a whole bunch of swag, great t-shirts again. And that's at pgxgloves.com. I tell you what, they are just fantabulous. They are just great stuff. It's something we always look forward to and love to go to their website. It's great. Again, go to pgxgloves.com. Don't forget on our show Extra Innings, we'll have the PGX Player of the Week and the PGX also Pitcher of the Week, and that'll be coming up on Sunday for sure. All right, our special guest tonight, we had Sam Raz of the Scott Holman podcast. Good luck to the Houston Cougars this weekend in Indianapolis as they're in the Final Four. Well, good luck to them, and also to former ECU basketball coach Mike Steele, our good friend and new and a buddy as well. We appreciate them. Thanks to Kyle and Bubba behind the scenes. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to our great, great show, and that's the Sports Objective. Good night.